Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
Person has Jordan. Now it shakes free. Gets two!
Gilmore.
To go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Jordan. Open. Chicago with the lead.
Hello and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA podcast. I am Jason Mann and joining me as always is Rich Craich. Rich, great to be with you.
Yes, nice to see you again. It's been quite a while since we talked. What, 2 weeks since we finished our marathon of the NBA Finals Game 7 series? And we're finally back at it, though, with yet another arduous long project. But this one's going to be a lot of fun. I cannot. It's one we've wanted to do forever, pretty much since the moment we started, you know, the idea of doing this podcast. And it's one that we're just going to work through the entire summer. And I don't know if we're going to come to a conclusion. I don't know what the hell we're going to do with it, but it's going to be fun along the way. So that's all I know.
Yeah, we're looking back at the 50 greatest players in NBA history, the list that was compiled in 1996 and was celebrated at the 97 All-Star Game. And we're the first part of this is what we're going to do is we are going to look back at all 50 players who were chosen, just kind of take a glance at each one, sort of look at them in a new light, you know, thanks to, you know, maybe looking at some advanced stats for those guys that, of course, weren't really around in 96, 97. And just kind of consider them from a wide range of criteria. And, you know, just kind of a purpose is to have fun, to talk about the history of the game that we love. So we're going to go through the sort of the no-brainers on today's show, you and I, and then we're going to have Curtis Harris on, and we're going to do a few shows looking at the other candidates who, you know, if we were going to redo this list in 2015, who, you know, may or may not make the list, you know, based on different things. And then from there, I think we're going to look mostly at post 1997 players and decide, you know, okay, hey, would they be on this list? Would they not be on this list? And why? It's sort of a way, I guess, just to have like a, you know, rich discussion of the history of the game, of current players and kind of where they stand and all those things. And maybe looking at like what the best way is to, you know, evaluate these players.
Sure. And that's going to be one of the issues that we're going to kind of run through with a lot of this is that we're spanning, you know, all eras here. And it becomes an issue when you try to, you know, how do you connect LeBron James to George Mikan or whatever? I mean, it's super, super hard. And that's going to be one of the things that we're going to kind of tackle and talk and theorize a little bit about as well, because some people have different methods. You know, we're going to use advanced stats. We're going to use basic stats. But then we're also sometimes just going to have to say, hey, look, you know, like the game is not the same. It's so hard to compare these two guys. So, you know, on its face, you know, a George Mikan type would seem so out of place in today's NBA, just as LeBron would seem out of place, you know, in the 50s NBA. But understand that those guys have to sort of live in their eras, and we can't necessarily plop them into different things and have everybody be in the same NBA, because it's just not possible and not plausible. So that's gonna be fun. It's a nice little kind of fun discussion here. And like I said, I don't know if there's like an unguided, like a truth of, okay, we have come up with the definitive top 50 and all of you are wrong or something like that, but it's gonna be fun to kind of get different people's opinions. And that's one thing throughout this entire series that we'd love to hear, is that immediately following a podcast, if you listen to it and you say, oh, you guys are completely idiots, like there's no way that guy's a shoe-in or that guy's out or that guy's on the bubble or whatever, we'd love to hear from you. Over and Back NBA, and that's going to be a big part of this entire project is seeing what people think and what their opinions are of this list, who you would put on post 97, all that sort of stuff. But I'm excited to tackle it and get into it.
Yeah, and if there's something, you know, we talk about a certain player and there's something really important that we, you know, just don't mention that you think might, you know, be worth changing our mind on somebody individually. That would be great too, or that kind of thing. So we of course would love, you know, any kind of feedback that we can get on this type of stuff, and, you know, pointing us to information that we may not have considered. You know, we're absolutely, you know, we're up for discussion on basically any aspect of this, no matter how obscure or nutty. I think we're going to try to be, you know, try to be there.
Yeah, this is it's our summer project, so we have plenty of time until, because, you know, we could break down and be a free agency. We might do a few shows, you know, otherwise throughout the summer, but this is our big focus this entire, you know, off season is this, and the entire summer is this sort of project and this top 50. So, yeah, we have plenty of time to go over every little nuanced whatever you want as far as it relates to the top 50 list, so.
Absolutely. So today we're going to talk about, you know, the basically the no-brainers. The guys who are absolutely in that, you know, without any argument or much of an argument at all. I know there's a few players that I think we're going to look at a little bit more deeply that maybe there could be a qualification, but these are basically players who, you would say were top five in the league for about 5 years and top 10 in the league for about 10 years. That was kind of the criteria that we went with as far as guys who, you know, are basically shoe-ins that don't require, you know, too much additional discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got a few other criteria as well. We're going to look, you know, as I mentioned, at advanced stats. And for people that aren't really familiar, I'm not going to kind of run down what each one of these stats mean and all that sort of stuff. We're just going to kind of, you know, say them throughout this. And if you're interested in what they mean and how they were calculated and whatnot, feel free to look it up. Basketball Reference is a great resource for all these. Anywhere, I mean, there's plenty of other sites as well, but Basketball Reference would be your, I think, your top one, and that's where we got all of our information from for this project. But yeah, we're going to talk win shares per 48, you know, value over replacement player, VORP, box plus minus, BPM, PER, the player efficiency rating. So you're going to hear those. Like I said, I don't want to spend every single time explaining what each of those are. So if you're curious, if you're not aware and you're saying, oh, what the hell is this value over replacement player they're talking about, feel free to look it up on Basketball Reference. And they do a great job of breaking down, you know, the calculation almost to a painstaking degree of exactly what goes into it. But if you don't really care, we're just going to kind of mention those as well as a part of the package. And then counting stats as well, you know, being top 20 in a certain points per game and a certain, you know, leaderboards and all-time leaderboards and awards and all that sort of stuff, you know, MVPs, all NBA, you know, all defensive team, all that sort of stuff. And being an important part of good teams as well, I think is an important distinction to make, you know, being one of the top two players on a winning team, being the best player on a team that wins, you know, a title, being, you know, even being second fiddle on numerous title teams, it all sort of counts. And it's all part of the package that we're going to kind of break down with every one of these candidates. So,
yeah. And I think, you know, we'll definitely consider somewhat of like, okay, was this guy really influential? You know, was he really important? And also things like, okay, you know, peak production versus longevity. I mean, you know, was this guy, you know, he was good for a few years, but maybe didn't have a long career. How do we weigh this versus, okay, this guy maybe didn't quite have the same peak, but he was just so good for so much longer. You know, and it'll obviously be, you know, depend on the individual case. And, you know, I don't know if we'll be 100% consistent about it because it's always hard to consider those things, but we'll definitely, that's sort of the kind of what we'll be looking at. For sure.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we can be, you know, consistent and bipartisan and stuff like that about, you know, counting stats and top 20 and that sort of stuff. But things like influence and you know, that sort of stuff's always going to have a little bit of minutia to it. So it's going to be sort of, yeah, like you said, it's going to be, those are going to sort of be case by case things where we're going to have to talk at a little bit more length and that sort of, because it wouldn't be fun if we just did a list of, okay, here's win shares. Okay, here's top 50 win shares, the end. Like, you know, that's not very fun. Or, oh, yeah, these guys are, you know, points per game plus, you know, assists plus rebound. Okay, we figured it out. We're done. Okay, that's it. So it's going to be a little bit more nuanced to that of these guys, because that makes it a little bit more fun, I think. I mean, from my standpoint, you know, obviously, if you listen to the show, I'm very big in, you know, advanced stats and statistics, but I understand when we're doing a list like this and the way we're setting this list up is that we're going to put in factors like team success, like that, the success that, you know, that player achieved. And then also, you know, like you mentioned, influence, like a guy, you know, changing the game in some sense, being a player that people remember, being, you know, a big part of the game for whatever period he was, that all that stuff's really important. So it's all going to kind of come into this list as well.
Absolutely. So shall we begin?
Yeah, let's do it. I can't wait for our very heated argument about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's inclusion in this list.
Absolutely, yes. He was, of course, a center, played from 1970 to 1989, six times MVP, 10-time All-NBA.
That's not too many. Yeah. That's not a lot. I mean, come on. What about all those other years, Kareem?
Yeah, the other 14 years we did not win.
Yeah,
the
he's got 14 years we didn't really win MVP. On. So right, I yes. mean, why we always talk about these six MVPs? Let's talk about the 14 other years. What are you doing, Kareem?
That's your hot take of the day so far.
No, I'm done.
And 10-time All-NBA first team, 5-time All-NBA second team, first all-time in win shares, and 7th all-time in win shares per 48. The most points, games, and minutes in NBA history. Also made 10 NBA finals and won 6 NBA championships. So,
and he's on my TV right now in a Travel Wisconsin commercial.
Oh, nice.
Very bizarre. I look up. I read Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I look up, and there he is.
Yeah,
riding a plane and telling me to go to Wisconsin.
Yeah, ironic that Kareem would be, touting Wisconsin yes. these days since he wanted to get out so bad.
Yeah, it's the irony of this commercial of, oh, just come to Wisconsin. It's a great state is the greatest
yeah.
thing ever.
Maybe he just likes visiting. But... Yeah.
yeah. Visit Wisconsin. Yeah. Don't live here. It's terrible. But, yeah.
Come for a week.
But, yeah, yeah. I believe Kareem should probably stay on the list and was a very good choice. So, there. I Absolutely. Think that's exhausted our Kareem discussion that we could. Possibly have so
absolutely and next is Charles Barkley, one of the greatest power forwards ever, played from 85 to 2000, won an MVP, was a 5-time All-NBA first team, 5-time All-NBA second team, and once was the NBA third team, 16th all-time in win shares, 9th win shares per 48. The only thing that would knock him down a little bit to me is, you know, he didn't quite have the longevity of some of, you know, like a
sure.
like a Duncan or Karl Malone. I mean, basically by any other standard, he is, you know, he had a long, extensive career, but other than that, you know, he obviously was outstanding.
Yeah. He's got a pretty clean resume here. It'd be hard to
argue.
I mean, yeah, you can maybe in 30, 40 years when we, you know, when you and I get back on these waves and discuss yes. that list,
right.
then maybe, you know, we can sort of talk about it or whatever. But at this point right now, I mean, there's no way you could either bump him off or think of him as anything but a great candidate for this.
Yeah, absolutely. Next is our old friend Rick Barry, who we
yes.
Did our first podcast on and played small.
Willed the Warriors to a championship.
Yeah, 1975 Warriors to a championship. Yeah, who led to our inspiring the 2015 Warriors.
Exactly right. That's yeah, I'm still taking credit for that. I still tell all my friends. Yeah, well, you know, the real reason they won is.
Yep. Yeah. Small forward, played from 1966 to 1980, spent 4 years in the ABA during that time, was actually first team player all 4 of those years for the ABA, also a 5-time All-NBA first team and a 1-time All-NBA second team, 38th all-time in win shares, 63rd in win shares per 48, so a little bit low on the win shares per 48 list. I mean, still very good, but, you know, not within the top 50. But I still think he's comfortably in, obviously, I don't know if there's anything that you have to add to that.
Not really. I think he is. And again, he might be a guy like Barkley where some years down the line, maybe you can start a discussion about him or whatever, but for right now, I mean, there's no, especially, you know, 5-team all, you know, NBA first team and the ABA stuff, we're going to count, you know, obviously as a big part of this project as well.
Right. And I'm unclear as to whether that was considered for the,
I don't know.
The NBA Yeah, but I think it's certainly worth counting. I mean, I think it's it changes a few players' resume, but I don't think necessarily, with maybe one or two exceptions, is a make or break kind of thing. But you know,
I think Barry, even regardless of those, I mean, I'm using that to sort of sweeten his resume. I think regardless of those, he's still probably, you know, up there. But yeah, I mean, the you know, making the all, you know, ABA team every single year that he was in the league, you know, I think absolutely Rick Barry is a perfect candidate. And yeah, like I said, years down the line, if you want to, you know, bring it up and maybe there's a discussion about him in 20 years, but right now, no, there's definitely not.
Elgin Baylor is next and played small forward 1959 to 72 for the Lakers. 10-time All-NBA first team. The thing that he's lacking a little bit is in the advanced stats. He's 72nd all-time in win shares and 105th in win shares per 48. And that kind of gave you pause a little bit.
Yeah, I was a little bit interested, and we sort of were going back and forth about a few of these guys, and one of your questions, at least with Elgin Baylor, is, you know, why do advanced stats not match up to his reputation? Why do we sort of assume, and you know, rightfully so, we assume that Elgin Baylor is a top 50 player of all time, and I don't really have a huge argument with that either, but you look at advanced stats, and you kind of go, oh, yeah, I don't know. Like, it's a little interesting, because you know, we ran some numbers here, and all players with 50-plus win shares, 17 PER, and .100 win shares per 48 through 1972, so those are, you know, Elgin Baylor stats. How does he rank sort of with those guys? He's 11th in win shares, 8th in PER, and then 29th in win shares per 48. He's also 6th in overall points of those, 6th in rebounds, and 8th in assists. So he's got a weird resume in the sense that, you know, in overall numbers and longevity sort of stuff, he does quite well. But per, like, efficiency stuff and, like, the win shares per 48 and per, you know, minute stuff, he doesn't grade out very well. You know, like you said, 105th in win shares per 48 all time, which is, you know, not a particularly great number. I mean, it's no slouch, but when we're talking top 50 players of all time and the guy is 105th, you kind of go, oh, geez, that's kind of weird. The biggest thing with him, and that's sort of something we're going to have to sort of tackle a little bit as we go on with this, is he played in an era where, you know, it was a little bit different of, we know now that, you know, guys are super aware of the efficiency of shots. And I'm not just going to chuck up shots and give up possessions and do all this sort of stuff. Every shot I take has to count. It should be from the best spot on the floor. It should be the best shot possible. Whereas other eras, you know, education-wise, obviously it's always been put the ball in the basket, and the guy that puts the ball in the basket more is probably better than the guy who doesn't. But there's a little less, you know, comfort there. I'm not sure the exact word, but whereas Elgin Baylor, you know, he's 24th, among that data set of guys that we brought up in field goal percentage, 15th in free throw percentage. And he's just hurt, you know, by those a lot of just not being a very efficient scorer, efficient shooter as he went on. Also some other things too, he's hurt by having a lot of mediocre seasons mixed in with his elite ones. His 59-60, 60-61, and 62-63 seasons are great. They're like elite level, awesome, awesome, great. In between those though, he has a lot of mediocre ones. You know, he's below 5 win shares in 64-65 and 65-66. And then from age 28 to his final year in age 37, he never had another 10-plus win share season, which is, you know, that's not like, that's very hard to do is to get 10-plus win shares, but the fact that he went that long, you know, almost, you know, he went eight years, you know, without having that, you know, in the tail end of his career really hurts those kind of efficiency numbers and the win shares per 48 and all that sort of stuff. He only got close in 68-69 when he had 8.5 win share. So not a total slouch again, but yeah, he had trouble getting to that elite level again after those three seasons. So he's an interesting one. I want to say yeah for sure, but he's one that I almost want to put on like a little asterisk just to kind of look at a little bit more. Whereas if, you know, if we have a strong case to replace him with a bunch of other guys, maybe he's one that we talk about. But it's interesting because it's hard to say because it's Elgin Baylor and you're like, no, that's really weird. But it's, you know, kind of unraveling in this project and looking at, you know, those advanced stats. He kind of, you start bringing up some questions about him.
Yeah. And he had, you know, a pretty severe injury in the 65 playoffs, a knee injury. And he was never quite the same player after that. He was still, you know, was good. And, you know, and volume wise, he was, you know, an incredible, you know, he still produced very well. But, I mean, you're right. Even by the standards of his era, he was a bit of a chucker. He did one thing I'll say about the influence aspect, and I don't know how much exactly I consider this, but you know, he was really the first. I mean, you know, he kind of began tradition that sort of continued with Connie Hawkins and continued with Julius Erving and continued with Jordan as far as just being like the do-it-all, like above the rim superstar who can score and who can pass and who can, you know, get the ball to the basket, and was just amazingly athletic and could dunk incredibly. And, you know, I mean, he was the guy who sort of he took that to another level and inspired, you know, a lot of other players as well. And that's worth something. I don't know exactly how much it's worth. But yeah, I mean, I think we both have, it's hard to imagine Elgin Baylor not making our final list. I mean, I would say that's almost impossible, but it is, I think, worth, you know, one thing about this project, it's worth, you know, taking, you know, for lack of a better term, sacred cows and looking at them a little bit more deeply and saying, well, you know, okay, maybe we can, you know, at least talk about it and have a conversation about, you know, where that value is and how well the numbers do it at looking at him and what else we need to consider and all that kind of stuff.
So he might be one to sort of add to another list that we'll bring up later. But yeah, as far as him, I mean, like you said, it's very hard to envision this list without him, but you know, and that's the point of this, is to kind of bring up some discussions about guys, because it wouldn't be any fun if we just said, yeah, everyone's good, perfect list, the end. So
yeah, exactly. So next is Larry Bird, played small forward, mostly some power forward, actually early in his career from 1980 to 92. Three-time MVP, of course, led the Celtics teams to 3 championships, 9-time All-NBA first team, 1-time on the second team, 26th in win shares and 19th in win shares per 48. Not really much argument against Larry Bird, I'm going to guess.
Not really, no. I think he is a worthy candidate. Yeah, he's another one. I mean, what can you really do? I mean, I don't think he's ever going to be up for a real big debate on this. I mean, that's like an elite guy. I mean, he's top 50.
Yeah.
Probably for I don't envision anybody bumping him off, but
we'll see. Obviously the influence of, you know, him and Magic transforming the popularity of the game.
I mean, that, even if you want to make an argument statistically and again, you're probably never going to win that argument. Even if you want to do that, I'm still going to say, okay, well, yeah, he basically was one of the primary people of taking the NBA out of the doldrums into this era, right? You know, and they're about to sign, you know, $10 trillion TV deal. Like, yeah, I think it's okay. Yeah. He's there. So
yeah.
It's not 10 trillion. It's actually like 26 million, a billion, isn't it? What is the exact number?
It's a lot.
Like, it's ungodly. Yes.
it's a lot. Yeah, I don't know.
It's better than a tape delayed NBA finals. So that's
it certainly is. Next is Wilt Chamberlain, center from 1960 to 73. Only one MVP, which is kind of, I mean, I've realized that, but it was like, oh yeah, only one time MVP. Seven time all NBA first teams though, three time on the second team, second all time in win shares and third win shares per 48. Most rebounds of all time, was the leading scorer of all time when he retired. Of course, would pass by Kareem and a couple other people now. Despite not having the same kind of team success, as Bill Russell, still, you know, led two amazing, teams, two of the greatest individual one season teams in history, two championships and, you know, and had a wonderful career.
Yeah. Wilt's, no argument for Wilt ever.
Yeah.
that's a shoo-in forever. So,
yeah. And maybe most dominant player, if you consider how just he smashed his era of all time. He's certainly in that conversation.
Yeah. It's going to be very hard for you to make an argument against Wilt. So yeah, I will not. So you can go ahead.
Here's another one that we'll have a little bit of discussion is Bob Cousy, who point guard for the helped lead the early Boston Celtics dynasty, played from 51 to 63, was a one-time MVP, 10-time All-NBA first team, twice on the second team. But another guy who's advanced statistics, not so great. 99th all-time in win shares, 145th in win shares per 48. What did you find, you know, kind of delving deep into his career?
Yeah, similar to Elgin Baylor and almost on a bigger sense, is Cousy's shooting really, 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 really hurts, you know, in terms of these sort of stats and win shares per 48. And, you kind of get paused for a second and go, okay, look, you know, on an overall sense, yeah, you know, point guards of that day, you know, guards of that day, you know, they weren't great shooters. They weren't really told to shoot as much or whatever. So what I wanted to do, though, was kind of look at Cousy compared with other guards of his era. So I did pre-70 guards and sort of looked at them. And he grades out a little bit better, you know, in that class. He's sixth in win shares among those, 10th in win shares per 48. But that data set is only out of 18. So we're talking still, you know, and these are, you know, high caliber guards. I should preface, I'm not doing every single guard, you know, pre-70s, but ones that had, you know, high win shares. But what's interesting though is he's 18th in this data set in field goal percentage, so that's dead last. He's 7th in free throw percentage, so he really struggles from that sense of just the shooting is not good, and it's bad even for his era, and it's bad comparable to his position and all that sort of stuff. When you look at guards with 90 plus career win shares, so again, that's no slouch, that's a lot of win shares. But when you look at that, Cousy, he's 32nd in win shares among that. He's 34th, which is last in field goal percentage, 14th in points per game, and then 9th in assists per game. So it's interesting. He never really quite, he doesn't really, from pure, you know, from an analytical standpoint and that sort of stuff, he doesn't rise above guards, you know, pre-1970. He doesn't rise above guards of his era. He doesn't rise above, you know, elite level guards. But he's an elite level guard. So you sort of get into that weird thing. Like, you know, I mentioned like 90 plus career win shares for a guard. You know, Cousy's in that class, and that's still worth something. So it's still, but it's interesting of is he an elite of that group, and sort of how do we judge him based off this? I mean, again, by pure, you know, influence and pure looking at the list and going, yeah, it's got it. Bob Cousy has to be on the list or whatever. But he's another one that when you kind of dig into it, the advanced stats a little bit and look at it, you go, huh? I mean, I don't really know. He never had a win share season above 10 or even 9, so that's pretty interesting as well. That, you know, he sort of was always okay, you know, always really good, but never really elite or great. Historically bad field goal percentage definitely hurts him stat wise. And a few other things above guard, among guards with 50-plus career win shares. Kuzi is second to last. It's 123rd among guards, you know, with that 50-plus career win shares and field goal percentage. Only Andy Phillips, 38%, is worse. So that's not a great class to keep. And then, yeah, you know, I sort of wanted to look a little bit at guards of that era as well, because you sort of brought up a question, and it's a good one as well, is that was poor shooting sort of typical from guards at the time? And should we really, you know, take that against Kuzi if you know, whatever, you know, stuff like that. And I yes or no is kind of what I came up with. And there are plenty of guards who had worse percentage than him, but he's still 59th among guards who played 250 more games during his era. So that's 51-70. And then he's a little worse. So sort of where he ranks in terms of field goal percentage again amongst guards of his era, which is, you know, 51-70. He's a little worse than Guy Rogers and a little bit better than Al Bianchi. So he's kind of in that. It's interesting. And then if we look at true shooting percentage, which obviously takes into account free throw shooting, it bumps Kuzi up to 50th out of 59, or up from 59. So again, it's interesting. I mean, how much do we sort of, because I think it's hard to have a list, you know, a top 50 list without Bob Kuzi, but you look at some stuff like that, and how much do we weigh sort of advanced stats? How much do we weigh shooting efficiency and that sort of stuff when we make this list? Because I really don't know. And that's going to be something we might have to tackle, you know, as we go on here. But it was very interesting to see him sort of reveal himself when we started doing this, you know, research. So
I think the comparison to guys whose contemporaries is the most interesting, because yeah, I mean, you can't really judge him by modern standards
I mean
some of these advanced stats sort of balance that a little bit, so there you can do some apples to apples comparisons, at least to a degree. But I mean, I would, again, obviously I would lean toward putting him in, but this does give me a little bit of pause. I'm like, huh, what does that mean? What else do I need to understand about Bob Cousy to, while considering all these different factors? All right. And next we have Julius Erving, who small forward, played from 1972 to 87, mostly with the 76ers. Had one NBA MVP and three ABA MVPs. Combined has nine all NBA and ABA first teams and three second teams. 12th all time in win shares and 25th in win shares per 48. In addition, of course, just has tremendous influence and style and imagination as one of the great dunkers in NBA history, particularly for his time.
Yeah, there's not a top 50 list without Julius Erving. I mean, that's just a no-brainer, absolute no-brainer.
Yeah, he even rates a little bit better than I expected in the advanced metrics.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised too. I thought he would be kind of one of those, and we've seen this throughout the process, and we'll talk, you know, more in future episodes about this. Is a lot of those guys that we consider the shooting guards, or the guards that could shoot, or the guard forwards that could shoot, or whatever. Those guys tend to be, you know, in advanced stats, especially, you know, in the era that Erving played, all those guys tend to be not rated nearly as well as we would sort of think or hope, or that would points per game would tell us or whatever. But not Erving. I mean, he checks out in win shares. He checks out in win shares per 48. He checks out in true shooting. He's right. Just everything you can kind of think of. So yeah, like he's an absolute no-brainer for this list.
Yeah. Next is John Havlicek, shooting guard and small forward, played from 63 to 78. Four times on the All-NBA first team, seven times on the second team, had a lot of longevity, particularly for the era that he played. 34th in win shares, 161st in win shares for 48, so that's not as strong. And I know you kind of had some issues with maybe having him be a definite on the list.
Yeah, I think you can make a somewhat of a case for him, and maybe it's not a definite, you know, maybe we just move him down to, you know, one of the likely or one that we kind of talk a little bit later about. But yeah, the advanced numbers don't jump out for Havlicek, and it's not just strictly because of his numbers or his minutes, because you look at, you know, the win shares per 48, and like I said, once 161st in that category, he actually does better in pure win shares than he does when you do it by minute based. In comparison to league, I did it also, comparison to league 19 pre-1979. So looking at kind of the league before him to see sort of how he ranked among those. This is guards and forwards, of course. He's 17th in field goal percentage. He's 20th in true shooting, 24th in win shares per 48, and 8th in win shares. So while that's pretty good, it's tough to say, because that's strictly, you know, pre-1979 just his position, and he's not jumping off the board on those, but he's at least above average. So there's something there. The first 7 years of his career, he had no win share years above nine. Then he had four straight from 69 to 73, followed by five more under 10. So it's interesting. He had a super high peak, but took a while to get there. And then once he got there, he was there for a little bit, and then he kind of fell down again and was just sort of okay. But, you know, doing this and looking at it, he's a guy that I've sort of wavered on as I've gone. Like, and when we were first done, I said, oh, I don't know, maybe we can kind of put him on the maybe list or a guy to look at. Then I look at that peak. I mean, that peak was spectacular, the one that he had, and I think there's a lot to be said for that. And the criteria we're using is it rewards a guy who, A, is on winning teams, which, of course, Havlicek was, you know, a big part of title teams, of course, Havlicek was, and then a guy who had a spectacular peak but didn't fall completely off a cliff. And I think that describes Havlicek in a lot of ways. Is he a guy that I would say is a shoo-in? I don't know if he's a shoo-in, but is he a guy when it's all said and done that probably will still make the list? I do think so, but I at least think there's some sort of – we can bring him up in sort of an argument before we immediately just say, no doubter, he's definitely in. And that's basically all I wanted to – I'm not striking him off the list immediately, but a guy that at least we could probably discuss or look at a little bit further if we wanted to.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the one thing that, you know, his first four or five seasons, he came off the bench, you know, as the sixth man for the, so that does deflate those win share. I mean, he probably would have been able to contribute more had he been given the chance to do so. But then again, he did, you know, he contributed quite a bit, you know, in his older years as well. You know, it being a part of that team might deflate, that his totals a little bit, although his totals overall are very strong because he had such a long career. So it's kind of an interesting mix of things. I think that's fair that, you know, maybe moving him to like very likely as opposed to absolutely in is a fair thing, even though he does check that box of, you know, of, you know, the, as far as the things that we kind of said for shoo-ins. But I think, you know, looking at him a little more, I think is absolutely fair. Next we have Magic Johnson. Who is in?
I think he is.
Yeah, he's definitely in. Played point guard. Actually, he was listed as a shooting guard his first four seasons, which I thought was interesting. Norm Nixon, you know, being the point guard, which I knew they shared duty. He played from 80 to 91. And then made really in 96 in which he played power forward. So a lot of versatility there, of course. Famously, he, you know, started game six of the 1980 finals at center. Three-time MVP, nine-time All-NBA first team, once on the second team, was 23rd in win shares, and eighth in win shares per 48. You know, obviously one of the greats along with Bird, you know, who led the NBA to explode in popularity. Not much needs to be said. Five championships, I believe nine finals appearances in his career in just 12 seasons. So, so good stuff.
Yeah, he's in. I don't think you're gonna get much of an argument here ever. Yeah. So yeah.
Speaking of not much of an argument, Michael Jordan.
Oh, I don't know about that. No. Well, this is gonna be the hot take of the day. No.
Yeah. Shooting guard from 85 to 2003. He did miss almost five seasons in the midst of those, but a five-time MVP, also was once Defensive Player of the Year, 10-time All-NBA first team, once second team, fourth in win shares all time and first in win shares per 48. Many people's choice for greatest NBA player of all time. He's certainly you know, the favorite in that conversation. So he's in.
Yes. No, I don't think we need to spend any moments on him. Yes.
Yes. Karl Malone, power forward from 1986-2004, two-time MVP. One of those might have been a little sketchy, but, you know, he was very good that year, very close to Jordan's level. 11-time All-NBA first team, twice in the second team, once in the third team, third all-time in win shares, 18th in win shares per 48. You know, tremendous longevity, one of those guys who managed to still be a really great player in his late 30s, really only competing with like Duncan and Kareem as far as guys who were still really great at that level so late in their career. You know, another amazing player.
Yeah, great peak, great longevity. I think a lot of ways the longevity is spectacular for him. I mean, you're talking about a guy who really never – I mean, we had that, you know, obviously that one Lakers season, you know, the ill-fated Lakers season. But even then, he was still really, I mean, like, here's a guy who realistically probably could go, have went a few more years if he really, really wanted to. But he didn't. He kind of left, you know, not, I won't say on top, but semi on top. And just, yeah, from peak, from longevity, Carmelo ticks all the boxes. Just absolutely a shoe-in sure thing for this top 50.
Yeah, I mean, he suffered, you know, that injury that year that basically ended his career.
Yeah.
I mean, he came back, but yeah, other than that, I mean, and he was also almost never hurt his entire career.
Exactly. Yeah, that's another thing that's just spectacular. You look at, you know, I was firing up earlier and looking at his games and game started or whatever. You look at this year's in 81, 82, 82, 80, 82, 82, 81, 82, 82, 82, right. 82, 82, yeah. 81, 49, lockout, 82, 81, 80. 81 and then 42, even in his final year of like just unbelievable, like long of you don't see. I mean, that's just even the most healthy guys, that still just seems insane to have that record of for up until his 40 year, his age 40 year, and then just kind of aged gracefully and just kind of went away. And he's a guy that I could have seen going until he's like 43 if he really wanted to. But hey. And he wrestled. I mean, you and I are going to put him extra on the list for his contributions.
Absolutely.
Yeah. WCW Bash at the Beach 98. I mean, that's...
You know, a friend of Diamond Dallas Page is a friend of mine.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So next we have Moses Malone, center.
Did not wrestle.
Not in WCW.
That I know of.
Yeah. You know, he could have. He was... He might have gotten into Houston.
He might have went into Houston territory. He might have been... him and Paul Posh might have done a few...
You're losing a lot of our fans right now, Rich.
I know. No, some of them, I've gained some of them.
Okay.
And it's just people that know us from our previous lives or my other life. But yeah, everybody else is gone, so that's fine. I'll just stop talking now.
All right. Center from 1975 to 1995, another guy with tremendous longevity, although toward the end of his career, last 3 years didn't play much. Three-time NBA MVP, four-time All-NBA first team, four-time on the second team, so slightly below the standards of the 5-10 rule. But, I mean, those three MVP, it's very close, and those three MVP certainly, you know, put it up there. 13th in win shares, 49th in win shares for 48, which is a little bit lower than I would have expected. A slightly shorter peak than I would have thought, but it was a tremendous peak, and... you know, he was for when he was dominant, he was really dominant.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a guy that, I mean, we talk about shoe-ins and there's some guys that are no doubters. Moses, you kind of have to stop for a second, sort of look at the stuff. But once you're done doing it, he's a guy that absolutely should be in there, deserves to be in there. And a guy that I don't think anybody's going to really make a strong argument that he needs to be, you know, removed or thought about even at a further level. I think he's a pretty good end.
Yeah. Next is George Mikan, center for the Minneapolis Lakers from 49 to 56. Was a six-time All-NBA first team. Also the 1948 NBL MVP, which was one of the two leagues that merged to form the NBA. There was no NBA MVP until after he retired. Otherwise, he would have won multiple MVPs. Five titles in six seasons in the NBA, plus a NBL title in 48. He is 65th in win shares total, but if he had played enough minutes to qualify, he would be third in win shares for 48. The only thing that you could ever say is a negative for him is like, okay, he probably wouldn't be able to play in the modern game, or really even a few years later, you know, once the shot clock was happening, it would have been more difficult for him, and more athletic guys are coming in like Bill Russell and so forth. So he retired probably at the right time, but first of all, who cares? We're talking about guys.
It's a terrible argument. Yeah.
Yeah. How they played, when they played. And second of all, I think a lot of these guys, you know, you give them modern training and, you know, and things change a lot. But the greats are pretty much going to be the great no matter what. But even so, I mean, yeah, just he lacks the, you know, he didn't, the only other issue is the longevity, but he just dominated the league when he played. So I think he's absolutely a shoe-in for me.
Yeah, for sure. I would say, you know, given his era, given what he did in his era, I mean, that's very important. And we mentioned that at the top of the show, that that's going to be something we're going to have to wrestle with. But the idea that we're judging this off of what guys can do in today's game or you know, out of their era, or even, you know, a guy like you said with Mike, and it could be 10 years earlier, whatever. We can't hold that against the guys. The guys can only play in the era they play in. Things are, I mean, Mike, that's such a silly, silly argument, because then to me, if we did that argument, this entire list would be just the current guys, because I think, I mean, when you talk about modern, you know, modern medicine, modern nutrition, the modern game, these guys be brought up to, you know, I mean, there's so many factors in there that, yeah, it's insane. I mean, LeBron James would score 170 points if he played in Mikan's era or whatever, and Mikan might not get off the bench in today's era. That doesn't make Mikan any less great for his era. I mean, he dominated. You can only dominate the era that you're in. You can only play in the era that you played in. You know, so that argument where we have to kind of, oh, well, what would he do in this era and what would he do in that era? That's silly. I mean, we have these stats, and a few of them do sort of, they account for league averages and stuff. So that helps us a little bit, as, okay, you know, what was the league, you know, field goal percentage at this time? What was the league average? Points per game? You know, those sort of help us judge era, you know, to an extent, but still, a guy like Mikan's case, dominated when he dominated in the era he played. That's all you can ask for. I mean, we can't extrapolate him to any other era or any other thing like that. So that argument is silly, and we will not be making that argument whatsoever. We're going to look at these guys in the era they played and judge them based off that versus anything else. But Mikan is an absolute shoe-in.
Yeah, for sure. And another shoe-in is Shaquille O'Neal, center from 1993 to 2011. Was only 4 years into his career when he was named this list, but clearly proved that he belonged, you know, with the rest of his career. Only one MVP, although he had a couple of years where he merited that award. Maybe underachieved slightly because of his talent, but still had an amazing career. Eight All NBA first teams, two times in the second team, four times in the third team, 11th in win shares, 14th in win shares for 48. He of course led the Lakers to three straight NBA championships. Great stuff.
Yep. In your mind, if he retired or some horrible injury happened to him immediately after that year when he was named in the top 50, Would you still consider him a worthy one, or would that be one where you kind of laugh at and go, oh my God, they really, you know, jumped the gun on that?
I mean, I think if he had retired like right at that moment, I don't think that would quite be enough. If he had, I don't know. I think if he at least like had played, like, let's say through like 2000, 2001 and had a couple of those championships, I think he definitely
get at least a title,
would be on it. Right, because he was really, really, you know, he had a couple of down years, relatively down years in Orlando. He dealt with some injuries and wasn't quite as great, and it took a little bit for him to kind of get back to, like, those peak levels. But those years, I mean, he was just, you know, incredible in the regular season, and particularly in the finals and in the playoffs. I mean, he just kicked everyone's ass. So,
yeah,
I don't know exactly what, which I would say, oh yeah, Shaq's definitely in, but definitely by that Lakers time, if not even maybe a couple seasons before then, just because of, you know, that level of performance for that number of years.
Sure. So NBA lucked out, but yeah, it could have gone real south by naming him already, but I get it. I mean, he was a dominant player at that point, a very marketable player, all that sort of stuff. But yeah, he only strengthened his resume in the next, you know, 5 years, and then, you know, even more in the next 10. So yeah, I absolutely a shoe in, absolutely deserves to be on the list, and will not be a debate about, you know, keeping him on for sure. He's in and in forever.
Yeah. Next we have Hakeem Olajuwon, played from 85 to 2002, one MVP, twice defensive player of the year, six-time All-NBA first team, three-time second team, three-time third team, 20th in win shares, and 43rd in win shares for 48. You know, interestingly enough, he's behind Shaq in both those categories, and that's not necessarily something I would have
expected
going in. Yeah, and well behind in the win shares for 48. I mean, he's slightly below, what I would have expected. He's below Shaq, and he's below David Robinson in that category. And maybe viewed as the best player of all those guys. I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure exactly. Maybe
yeah,
Shaq
I would.
I don't know. But
no, see, I would put Hakeem better. And I think one of the problems, and this is where you get some issues with, you know, a win shares or win shares for 48 or whatever, is that Shaq. Well, yeah, I would definitely take Hakeem as well. But they really heavily, in terms of efficiency and field goal percentage or whatever, and there was few better than Shaq at that. I mean, that guy could pretty much anytime he wanted put the ball in the basket and really didn't get any sort of, and we're talking about Hakeem and David Robinson, obviously they were fantastic at it as well, but Shaq is one of the all-time greats at that. I mean, you look at his field goal percentage and it's just stunning how good he was at just You know, the guy just did not miss many shots. So that those stats in a lot of ways will probably overrate him a little bit because of that. And then you can make the argument, okay, is he, I mean, personally, if I was picking a team, I'd probably get Hakeem, but man, that those in the early 2000s, there was, I mean, that those Shaq, I mean, when there was just no other competent big men in there, I mean, just nobody could stop Shaquille O'Neal in that era. In the
I mean,
Western
even
Conference,
good
so.
Big men. Yeah, I mean, even great big men couldn't stop him. I mean, he was just amazing.
Mean,
yeah.
He was a force. So
right.
You can't really go wrong with any of those three. I don't.
Yeah.
I will flip.
Yeah. Hakeem had his years where, I mean, he played well, but he had, you know, a little bit of a reputation as a head case and a little bit, or maybe more just a guy who was difficult to deal with and maybe wasn't trying his hardest. And, you know, he nearly got traded from Houston at one point in the early 90s, I believe. So, you know, he had kind of his demerits as well, despite obviously his great success and his great reputation now. But just sort of interesting, the perception of the two versus the production of the two. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe Shaq is. I guess I'm clouded a little bit by what happened in the 90s with a lot, you know, the Rockets sweeping the Magic pretty easily and Hakeem, you know, outplaying Shaq in that series. I don't know the numbers offhand, but maybe that's a little bit of a part of it. But anyway, just this interesting stuff. Next is Bob Pettit, power forward and center, played from 55 to 65, twice MVP, including the very first NBA MVP, 10-time All-NBA first team, one-time second team, 31st in win shares, 11th in win shares per 48. I think he's probably the player of his era who is the most unremembered. I mean, underrated, I hate that word. It probably does fit here just because you know, Russell is so well remembered and Wilt obviously and Jerry West and Baylor to an extent. But Pettit was right at that level with all those guys pretty much and won a championship, beat the Celtics in the second year of their dynasty. You know, some great stuff, but isn't necessarily thought of in those terms because he didn't play for, you know, a team that's kind of viewed as a marquee team. And
yeah, well, like you said, those other guys are kind of like, you know, basketball history icons and NBA icons, and Pettit's not. He's just definitely on that. So yeah, I don't know. Underrated might not be the word. I don't know what the word would be, but yeah, those rest of those guys you name, and most people, even the most casual basketball fans, are going to know him. If you mentioned Bob Pettit, I could see a realistic thing where a lot of people would go, "Who did he play for? Like, where? When did he play?" Like, I could honestly see that. Like, if you know, a bunch of my friends would probably have very little idea about the history of Bob Pettit and where he played and what he did. So yeah, I think there is some credence to what you're talking about, that he's sort of below that icon status, even though, you know, he probably shouldn't be. I mean, he's every bit as good as all those guys. So, yeah, I mean, maybe on a little bit different level than, you know, a Russell or whatever, but right up there for sure.
Sure. Next is Oscar Robertson, point guard from 61 to 74 for the Royals and the Bucks. Pettit played for the Hawks, by the way, St. Louis Hawks. Well, for his first year as Milwaukee, the rest of the time was the St. Louis Hawks.
Yeah,
Robertson had one MVP, 9-time All-NBA first team, 2 times in the second team, forced famously average a season with a triple-double, 10th in win shares all time, 16th in win shares per 48, other than Magic Johnson, probably the greatest point guard of all time. Yeah, tremendous player. Another one of those, you know, great 60s players who still remembered ahead of Pettit, although, you know, tremendous player. So, anything more?
Yeah, he grades out well in basically everything you can look at. I mean, in terms of just rate stats, icon status, you know, awards, everything. I mean, winning the MVP. And then, you know, the advanced stats, they like him as well. I mean, he's a guy who shot, you know, quite a lot, but was efficient at it and worked. And yeah, of course, the assists and the triple-double and all that sort of stuff. I mean, the guy, yeah, he's a shoo-in for this and absolutely won, you know, an iconic NBA player and one of the best, easily a top 50 all-time player.
Yeah, yeah. Next is Bill Russell, center from 1957 to 69 with the Celtics, won 11 titles in 3 years, 5-time MVP, although only 3-time All-NBA first team, because the players voted for MVP until 79, I think, and the media did the All-NBA voting, so that was different people choosing, 8 times on the second team, also was 10-0 in game sevens and 5-0 in finals game seven.
That's ridiculous. Like,
yeah,
come on. You can't lose one. You can't like Just one? No. Gotta just win every single one of them. So it's incredible. And we talked about it at length in our Game 7 series. I mean, he kept coming up, and it's like, oh, God, the Celtics. But they kept winning, so.
Yeah, and, you know, even though he was no more as a defensive player than an offensive player, he's still 19th in win shares and 24th in win shares per 48. I mean, you can't – not too much more to say about Bill Russell, but.
No, yeah, we'd be wasting everyone's time if we spent time discussing the merits of Bill Russell. I mean, the guy, we all know he's a top 50 player and will never be left off a list. There's no scenario where you take him off, a top 50 NBA list and ever, all time, never. He's there.
Yeah. Dolph Schayes, power forward from 1950 to 64 with the Syracuse Nationals. A six-time All-NBA first team, six-time on the second team. 29th in win shares, 26th in win shares per 48, so very good in those ways. One of the early stars, maybe guy a little bit forgotten, you know, kind of behind behind Cousy and behind Mikan, but you know, with them on, you know, on their level. Won championship in 55, went to another finals or two as well. Just a great player. Probably doesn't help that his team doesn't exist anymore, or you know, they're the Philadelphia 76ers now. So that might be a thing with Pettit too, with moving from St. Louis to Atlanta. You sort of lose your, you know, you don't have the same connection
really
with the team. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good point that, yeah, there's not that installed, like, you know, basketball legacy, or, you know, there's guys we'll talk about later, like a Wes Unseld is like Washington basketball, even though, you know, they've changed from the Bullets to the Wizards or whatever. When you think Washington basketball, he's an icon, you know, an iconic figure, an icon in Washington basketball. Yeah, Bob Pettit's sort of without a, and Dolph Schayes is the same way too. Yeah, so I could definitely see that. I think that's a really good point.
Yeah. Thank you. And last but certainly not least is Jerry West.
Logo. We can't keep the logo out. I mean, come on. That'd be ridiculous.
We cannot. He played point guard and shooting guard from 1961 to 74, 10 times on the All-NBA first team, two times on the second team, 21st in win shares and 10th in win shares per 48.
Yeah, does well.
Yeah.
I was surprised. I thought he did better on the advanced stats than I thought he would, and that's, you know, no slight against him, but you know, we're going through this, you know, series, and there's guys that I think of and I go, oh, you know, here's a guy where the advanced stats are definitely gonna think he's not as good. And they think he's better. Okay, never mind. Look, that's fine. That's good. That's why we're doing this exploration. That's why it's fun. But yeah, I thought Jerry West would get docked a little bit by advanced stats, just kind of an opinion coming in, but they weren't at all. So hey, go him. And that's, I'm glad to see, but yeah, there's no top 50 list without the logo. That'd just be ridiculous.
Yeah.
Unless of course they change the logo, but I don't think they're going to do that. And then we can take him off. No, I'm just joking.
Right.
Anthony Davis logo that they're rolling out next year. I'm sure to anticipate the future.
He might be the next guy. Yeah. You never know. He might be, you know, by the time he's done, maybe we'll be, you know, maybe when we do this, you know, in 10 years again, maybe we'll be calling for him to be the actual logo. But, So we're, you know, we're excited to do this project. We've got some great shows coming up with Curtis Harris, where we're going to go through all the rest of the top 50 players on the list and kind of go break down their, you know, strengths and weaknesses and where we kind of see them standing. And then after that, we're going to try to get guests from all over the basketball world to talk with us about newer players and, you know, their cases for being on the list or not being on the list. We're going to talk more about, you know, kind of looking at what stats are best to look at. We're going to try to talk to historians. We're going to try to talk to everybody we can to just get, you know, as many points of view as we can, get as many cases, talk about as many guys as we can. And by the end of it, you know, we're going to try to come up with our own top 50 list and see how we do. And at the very least, it's going to be a lot of fun exploring the past, as we like to do on the show. And I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I definitely am. And I think this is gonna be a fun examination. And like you said, one of the biggest things that we want to do is get other voices in here, get other people's opinions. I mean, cover every facet of every possible guy we can, you know, or and do everything we can and do our due diligence, just not to throw out a list there and go, yeah, this is our list, but to really, really research and really feel at the end super, super comfortable about the list we have. Not saying it's the definitive list, not saying that every other list is awful and, you know, this is the one for sure, but I want to feel, I wouldn't feel right if we just, you and I just decided, hey, let's just come up with the top 50. I want to get a ton of different voices, and I'd be interested to see what other people think as well of what their top 50 would be if we were to ask, hey, what's your top 50? And because I think what comes of it and what we found is coming of it is you talk. I mean, you're researching these guys. You're looking it up. You're looking at where they fit historically. You're looking at rankings. You're looking at stats. You're reading, you know, articles. Like this is probably and hopefully will be the most exhaustive sort of research and exhaustive, you know, set of podcasts we've ever done. But that's exactly what we want this to. I mean, that's the fun of this, and hopefully other people find the fun in this too. Is like, okay, look, we have the off season, we got some time, don't have to worry about current games. Let's go read about the past. Let's go look at stats. Let's go run some numbers on guys. Let's go. There's just so much stuff you can do here, and so much fun that can be had by looking at, you know, the past and looking at the great past as well. I mean, looking at, you know, the historically great players and figuring out who's on that great great list. Versus just, I mean, there's a lot of fun in that. I enjoy it, and I hope other people enjoy it too. But I think it's going to be a great series, and I can't wait to see how it all unfolds when it's all said and done. So
yeah, for sure. So, and yeah, I mean, we're up in the air on, you know, we haven't really sat down and looked at like all our choices and seen, you know, who
very fluid. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, we obviously these guys will be on, and you know, there's a few other current players who are definitely going to be on. But there's going to be a lot of spots that are open. And you know, I'm gonna try to, you know, keep it to as late as possible to kind of make those decisions and weigh as many things as possible and, you know, just see what we can figure out. So, thanks everyone for checking us out. We'll be back with more shows on this topic soon. You can find us at hardwoodparoxysm.com. We're part of the Podium Game Network there. You can find us on iTunes if you search for Hardwood Paroxysm. We're part of the other great shows that are on that network. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Over and Back NBA. And give us any comments you want us to talk about or any feedback. We would greatly appreciate it. Rich, is there anything I'm forgetting?
No, and if you want to be a guest too, if you think, hey, I'm worthy to be a guest, there's this guy I want to talk about. That's something we, as Jason mentioned, we're going to talk about a lot of players, a lot of post 1997 players as well. And if you think you're the definitive, you know, resource on Kevin Garnett or whatever, or Tim Duncan or whatever, we'd love to hear from you. I mean, we have a little pool of guys that we want to interview and we want to talk to. Maybe we're missing somebody. If you say, hey, you can't talk about Kevin Garnett without talking to me, we'd love to have you on. I mean, that's going to be one of the biggest things here is participation among, you know, people on Twitter and getting different guests and getting to talk to different voices. I mean, you and I have our opinion, but it'd be great to get other people on here to say, no, here's how it really is, or here's what I think. And here's, you know, there's just a lot more fun in that. So absolutely. If you think you're worthy or that you'd like to be a guest or do something, hit us up on Twitter. We'll absolutely add you to the list and can't guarantee anything, but there's a lot we can do there, and it's going to be fun. So absolutely. Over and Back NBA if you want to hit us up on Twitter. And I think otherwise, Jason, you nailed it all.
All right. Sounds great. So everyone, we'll be back soon. So see you later.